It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking Nats news in just a moment on Grant and Danny. We'll get to that right after I tell you that the exclusive sponsor of our show is the law firm Kondori & Murrah. They'll guide you and your family in the right direction, help you draft a will, set up a trust, create a health care power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that we sent you to get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. This coming out of Nats Park, where the media is getting ready for availabilities with Davey Martinez and company. Josiah Gray has a partially torn UCL, and he's going to have surgery next week, ending his season, according to reporters over there, including our buddy Bobby Blanco from Masson Sports. This is not Tommy John yet. They don't know if he'll need a full Tommy John operation. That's going to take more evaluating and seeing what happens, I guess, in the weeks ahead. But an emotional Josiah Gray says his season's over, and obviously with a partially torn UCL, there's a really good chance he missed some time into next year with a lengthy recovery. What a shame. 26-year-old starting pitcher, was an all-star for the Nats last year with an ERA in the threes. He was actually excellent in the first half of the year before the all-star break, had an ERA sub-3. But over 30 starts, a 3.9, about 160 innings last year, and almost 150 strikeouts for Washington, was going to be a key member of this rotation moving forward. Now it's going to be a lengthy rehab. I actually bumped into him in the Navy Yard right by the ballpark on the street. A couple of what must have been late last week, almost a week ago now.
Mm-hmm.
It was like raining outside, and he's like, dude, what's up? So we started chatting, and I didn't get a good vibe that he was going to pitch again this year, to be honest.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where I wasn't comfortable asking any more questions or poking or prodding. But today he said that it's a partial tear. This stinks. No other way around it.
No, that's it. It sucks. Lost year, and you feel for the guy, because like as the ascension is happening, right? As you said, great first half. You know, kind of wore down. I think last year's the year went on, but deserving of an all-star nod. And he was the opening day starter this year, and it just never happened for him. You knew something was seriously amiss when, as they're slowly but surely taking care of him, and they should, by the way, for his rehab, as he's on his way back, when they had to shut him down again, and there was that fatigue, and then he wasn't feeling real good, and then they tried to throw, and he couldn't, and you're going, oh no, this just feels like one of those things where we're going to look up, it's the end of July, he still hasn't pitched the major league game, and then you're going to find, you know, something seriously wrong. So, you know, speedy recovery. Hope he's fine. Hope he's able to come back in short order and be, you know, healthier than he was this year. But yeah, it just stinks. You know, when pitching is such a fickle thing. I mean, for every, you know, for every Nolan Ryan, there's a bazillion of these guys where it's such a violent mechanism on very tiny little, you know, hold together type parts, these little tendons and ligaments and things, dealing with an outrageous amount of strain. Your big muscles, your quads, your glutes, and your hamstrings, and your biceps, those are perfectly capable of being load-bearing structures. These little tiny things, you never know on how someone's wired or made. So it's a bummer when it happens.
I just finished reading The Arm, which is a Jeff Passan book about injuries to arms in baseball and how we can quell them, or if we can quell them, maybe is a better way to put it, which was a New York Times bestseller. It's been out for several years. Inside the Billion-Dollar Mystery of the Most Valuable Commodity in Sports, talking about pitchers. And it's an incredible book if you've never read it. I just finished it coming back from Texas. But I bring this up to say, you're right, arms break, and it's inevitable. You know, you think you have these plans of who's going to be in your rotation, and it is evolving and always changing, and it's why, if you think you're set, you're not. In order to navigate a year, you better have 7, 8, 9 starting pitchers you really like. And moving forward, the plan was Josiah Gray would be in this young rotation with Jake Irvin and Mackenzie Gore and Mitchell Parker and some of the guys that are on the come in the minor leagues. And you, at least for the rest of this year and into the early part of next year, take Josiah's name off the list. I do not want to blame the victim, and I hope it doesn't sound like I'm doing that here. But it is always baffling to me when guys are having arm issues and they keep going, you know, rather than just immediately opting to shut it down. And I don't know what I don't know. Like, maybe there wasn't imaging done, or maybe they didn't know there was any UCL damage. But when you start to hear forearm and elbow and, like, some of the stuff we were hearing with Gray,
yep.
I mean, those were some of the most alarming words in pitching. And they just kind of shut it down, and then he kept pitching, or, you know, tried to come back, right? How often does that work? And I know these guys are the ultimate competitors, and the last thing they want to do is give up a year in the prime of their careers. But I just feel like the batting average on shutting down, rebooting, like building your arm back up, and then not eventually having the TJ when you're dealing with something like he was, seems really, really rare.
So the only thing I can come up with, you remember, now it seems funny to say in retrospect, talking about Strasburg, the ultimate sort of, you know, long-time injury case here, but at the end of, I want to say it was maybe 17 or 18, when he had kind of that forearm tightness, elbow flare-up, and you and I are going, oh my God, it's happening again, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no, and turns out it wasn't that bad. It really was a let's rest and figure it out, and these things might fuse together on their own. And then it did, and then I think he threw a career high of innings, you know, either a year or 2 years after that. All kinds of run together now. Once in a blue moon, it's that. But you and I have been around enough, and people follow baseball enough, when you hear the phrase forearm tightness, when I experience it hanging out with you guys, it's not that big a deal. When the guy that's trying to throw the orb in a you know, vice-like grip with 2,300 RPMs and snap off breaking balls and throw splitters and change-ups and make things maneuver, that's a troubling warning sign. That's one of those things where you go, uh-oh, that very rarely ends with just, we'll stop throwing for 10 days and then play some catch from 60 feet and it'll be fine.
I think one other thing that should be acknowledged is he wasn't overworked. Like, there's only so much teams can do.
Yep. Eventually, you got to throw the ball.
To protect these guys. He was not a guy that the Nats were allowing to throw 8-9 innings at a time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The last 2 years, there was no real big violent jump either. I mean, he went from 2021, where a big part of his season was in the minors, but a similar number of innings, to 2022, where he makes a little leap and throws 148 innings. And then last year was 160. Like, that is the out-of-the-book staircase progression that teams are seeking. Now this year he gets to 180 or 190, right? Now you're built all the way up as a 27-year-old next season. Like, they were doing this by about as much the blueprint as there is, but there's no way around it at this point. We're doing something unnatural. Arms,
yep.
While they are supposed to throw things, dating back to the beginning of our time in caves or whatever it was that we were doing, like, we're launching things. They're not supposed to throw things 98 miles an hour, 95 miles an hour, over and over and over again. And so they do. They break. But in Josiah Gray's case, hopefully the recovery is speedy. He's back as soon as possible and helping the Washington Nationals. More on that story as it develops, and we will get you some thoughts on the Nats and Gray at the top of the hour as part of our Beltway Blitz as well. And there was a time when he was a highly regarded rookie. Let's talk rookies. They showed up in Ashburn. They are at work right now. The Commanders getting ready for practice number one next week at training camp. So I just wanted to run through their rookie class really quickly for a little state of the union based on several weeks post-draft, the reporting, and what we've kind of heard to this point. One caveat being, glowing reports don't always mean a whole lot. Remember last year through training camp.
Oh, yeah.
The Emmanuel Forbes love, the obsession with him. And every pick and every PBU in practice, the live tweeting, like, I think people thought this guy was going to go have five pick sixes, and it just couldn't have been a worse rookie year. That having been said, let's start with quarterback Jaden Daniels.
The reports have been glowing. The thing that I've found amazing is reports from other teams that aren't there at Washington's training camp practices or OTAs or rookie minicamps are also glowing. I don't know. But you get small little data points from around the league. But again, this whole season starts and stops of what Jaden Daniels does or doesn't do as a rookie. It validates every decision they made, every decision they didn't make, everyone they passed on, everyone they selected. All of it really comes down to, does he play well? Do they have the special thing? Do they have the guy that's going to actually change the franchise for the positive? It's not fair to expect someone to be C.J. Stroud. They made one of those guys. There's like a Stroud, a Herbert, a couple others. Even guys that we think of as superstars, very rarely hit the ground running. Mahomes didn't play for a year. Joe Burrow was having a pretty good rookie year when his knee was blown out here in Washington, ironically. I mean, it's really, really hard to do what a couple guys in history have done. It's a lot more closer to kind of what Russell Wilson did, which is, or Ben Roethlisberger did, even the great ones, where you do some as a rookie, but it's mostly pretty good surroundings, and eventually more and more is put on your plate to become a star in this league. So far, we've seen nothing but glowing reports about Daniels, the infectious personality, the work ethic he's carried over, which made him a star at LSU, apparently has come here about the early morning club, some of the leadership roles, not just yelling at guys like, here we go, teammates, but walking over to a veteran going, hey, what'd you see on this play? Here's what I saw. What's different? What's good? What's better? Those sorts of things are maturity, and that's really what's got people excited.
The stuff that matters, I think, which is the on-field and then the building reporting, has been excellent on Jaden Daniels. There have been two very minor things in terms of some judgment stuff that haven't gone perfectly. I'll be honest, I just don't care that much about those. If they end up being indicative of a guy that just doesn't have good judgment, that's a problem. I'm not willing to go there yet. And I'm talking about he had the, you know, $10,000 bet or whatever it was on Rookie of the Year, remember, that got public with his former teammate Malik Nabers with the Giants. And then, of course, the weird practice video picture, Brandon Ayuk flirtation thing that happened a couple weeks ago. Pretty minor stuff in the grand scheme of things. Way more importantly, it seems like his teammates, the coaches, and everybody in the building perceives that this is a worker. And that is what excites me. Already at this point in the past with some players, I was being told from people on the inside, uh-oh. Because what happens is, okay, it sounds bad, and maybe it was. Maybe the culture was bad, and coaches getting the word out or other players getting the word out that, like, this guy's not doing it right. You could say that that's not a sign of a good workplace. That could be true. Maybe this one, everyone's just saying what they're supposed to say and being nice, even if they don't think that, because it's a much better culture. And I would make the case if that's true, then it still gives them a better chance to thrive than the guys before, because that's what you want, is a good culture. But what you sometimes will see is people will start to distance themselves if they don't think the guy's going to be good. Or
it's a CYA, yeah.
Exactly. It's going to work out where they go. They just want everyone to know that they're on the record to essentially say, I don't see it.
Yeah, not my fault. Wasn't me.
And I'm getting zero of that with this guy. And I love that, right? Some of that is it's a brand new group. It's a brand new staff. And, you know, I don't know that those people are putting the word out with anyone in town on anything at this point. But it seems like it's good news all the way around on Jaden Daniels, and we know about the physical tools and the traits. The second round is where they used the first of their selections on Jerjan Johnny Newton. He was placed today, Danny, on NFI. That is the non-football injury list, even though his injury stems from football. But because these injuries date back to his time before he was drafted, he is eligible for NFI. Important note, NFI better than PUP.
Mm-hmm.
That's the list that a lot of guys get put on. Chase Young is an example yesterday with the Saints. Because the PUP list essentially gives you a chance to stay on a list all the way into the start of the season. And there are weeks that are assigned.
Required almost, yeah.
Based on the PUP distinction until you can practice or play again. NFI is like putting money away, investing money you can pull out anytime. So NFI, if they wake up tomorrow and Newton's like running around and he's just healed and he's the grandpa from Willy Wonka dancing in his room, then all of a sudden they could just take him off NFI and no harm, no foul. So I think NFI is much better news than PUP.
I agree. So and that's a good explanation too there, by the way. But again, this was always kind of my concern here about this particular year. Long term, you know, you hope that. I mean, think of other defense. Remember, John Allen had a health concern. It was his shoulder, allegedly, or something like that. That's why he fell to Washington in the teens, and he's been outstanding and has been pretty damned available almost all the time. So you look at Newton, you're hoping this is something that doesn't linger, and you know, he sort of just gets over it, and it, you know, he's good to go, if not somewhat this season, in the future, and it's not one of those like chronic cases. But you know, we don't know yet. We simply don't know. And at this stage, it's still affecting him. Will it still be in a month? Again, the NFI, more optimistic maybe than PUP would certainly be, because we've seen that linger, as you mentioned. Chase Young is the ultimate case, where what's supposed to be 6 weeks comes and goes, and nobody's asking any questions, and then we're at week 12, and maybe that's going to happen, and then it's not, and then he's not really sure if he can play hard or not. I mean, None of that crap. I don't want to see that again. So hoping he's okay.
They know way more than we do on everything, and specifically on this kind of thing, like on injuries. So they know right now what the projected timeline is. They have a plan. I don't know what it is, but hypothetically, they want to get him on the practice field. I'm just making these up, but like by August 1st, they want to have him ramping up by August 15th and ready for week one. But potentially, their target is week four. Like, we just don't know.
We have no idea.
They're also not going to offer that to us, and we can know that going in, too. Dan Quinn is not going to suddenly just start giving timelines. I'd be surprised if, when he does his first press conference next week at training camp, he says, yeah, you know, we don't expect Johnny to be ready for the start of the season. We still think he's going to have a very helpful year for us, and we're hoping by, you know, a quarter of the way or so through the year, you know, he's in the rotation and making plays. That would be great. That'd be candid. I just think it's going to be a lot of the week-by-week updates, a million questions, and I don't know why teams prefer that, because it adds to the consternation. It adds to the idea that something's lingering or not going well. You know, Curtis Samuel style.
Yeah, I remember when Ron Rivera was on with us as the news breaks that Curtis Samuel's on PUP, and he's like, yeah, you know, there's just something he's doing.
But like...
Right, how's that better?
There's no reason to lie about these things.
Right.
Because then all of a sudden, it just seems like the team was initially wrong, but they like to kind of keep things close to the vest, and until it's game week, they don't really have to tell you a whole lot come the regular season anyway. But I would still bet on him helping them a bunch this season. I don't know when we see him. I just think he's a really, really good football player. And if I'm assuming health and that he's 100% at some point, that means I'm assuming he's going to make plays, because that dude can play.
It's going to be curious how they use him. I mean, the opportunity, you wouldn't think if there's two defensive tackles on the field, he'd be one of the two. More often than not, he'll be part of a rotation at a minimum. At a maximum, it's exotic looks. It's, you know, three defensive tackles, one's kind of a glorified defensive end. Maybe you're moving guys around, trying to exploit a matchup that you think is advantageous for you against a certain offensive line, blitzing certain guys. I think it's not going to be one of those, everybody lines up in their original spot and tries to go forward. Very, you know, Del Rio sort of style. I think you're going to see some different things, but I'll be fascinated how he's deployed.
Agreed. I just think there's a chance to get him on the field a lot, because he can rush the quarterback some. So you could go, you could run a three-man defensive front with those three guys pushing the pocket and have a bunch of extra DBs, right, or linebackers. You know, have Frankie Louvu standing up. You could have guys like Jamin Davis, to me, with a three-man defensive front standing up and coming off the other side, pinning his ears back. I hope they get creative. I would imagine they're going to. I don't think you draft him if you don't plan on getting something out of him pretty quickly. But they have the two really good D tackles, so there's less urgency to make sure that you get something out of him. Also in the second round, Ben Sinnott, the tight end that they drafted, who's going to play some fullback, kind of an H-back type, Chris Cooley vibes. He's 6'4", 247, played his college ball at Kansas State. Sinnott's going to wear number 82 this year. And then the second rounder is Mikey Sanristil, who seems like the safest bet to be really good right away, playing in the nickel. I'm guessing he's going to be a third corner and their nickelback immediately from week one on, rocking the number two.
That's the sound of things, right? I mean, again, I always look at opportunity for rookies. You may not be great league-wide. You may not start for 31 teams, but do you have a chance here? And the answer for both Sinnott, in my opinion, and Sanristil is yes. I think those guys could be on the field early on, because I'm not a huge Zach Ertz 3.0 kind of renaissance believer. I think he's more of a veteran presence that'll be a nice safety valve, but I think Sinnott's a lot more dynamic. I think they see that.
Does Sanristil start week one?
I do. Yes.
I think so, too.
It's starting in the sense that if there's two cornerbacks on the field, maybe not, but it's the nickel. Everyone's in 11. Yeah.
So I agree with you. He'll be a starter.
Yeah.
Does Sinnott catch a pass in week one?
Yes.
I think so, too. All right, let's get to the rest of the rookies. Next, as we work our way through the class of first-year players for the Commanders, they have already reported training camp around the corner. This is The Fan.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the Free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Training camp for the Commanders kicks off on Wednesday. Welcome back. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. Rookies reported yesterday. We're working our way through the Commanders draft class to try to set some early season expectations, figure out when guys will be on the field. So you and I both think Sanra still is going to be an important player in the secondary right away. We both see Sinnott playing immediately. You said Sinnott's going to catch a pass in the first game. I do too. Who catches more passes this year, Zach Ertz or Ben Sinnott?
I think Ertz by a hair.
The only way I could see Sinnott catching more balls than him is if Ertz gets hurt.
Yeah.
Which will probably happen, honestly. But it's got to be a pretty serious thing at that point. And he'd only have to, you know, if he plays in 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 games, something like that, then maybe Sinnott does if he's healthy. But I think Ertz is, the plan is that he'll be more targeted, more involved early on than Sinnott. But there's also a chance, like, go back, I comped him to Chris Cooley when he came out of Utah State, who was a third-round pick at the time. I don't think the plan going in that first year with Joe Gibbs was for Chris Cooley to be super involved. But as the year went on, he just kept making plays. And next thing you know, you look up and it's 40 catches and, you know, over 300 yards, close to 400 yards, whatever it was. And that just became what they did in that season. Is Sinnott that type of player where he forces his way onto the field? I kind of think that's possible.
So that certainly would be the ideal scenario from a Sinnott perspective. I don't know that it'll go that way. I think there's a happy medium, too, where the tight end isn't just a huge focal point. They're Jaden Daniels is playing point guard, right? You've got McLaurin who's going to get his 125, 135 targets, right? Then, you know, Austin Eckler's going to eat into some of those. You know, presumably Dotson, maybe McCaffrey, who we'll get to in a second. I just think there's enough kind of to go around for multiple people to eat. I think there's going to be a lot of two tight end sets as well. I mean, I could see Sinnott in the mid-30s. You know, John Bates had 19 receptions last year. I don't remember a single one of them, by the way, just for the record. They're not terribly memorable type receptions. I do remember a lot of swatting the ball to the ground and hating the football a couple different times, so I'd like to limit those.
That's not nice. That's not fair. He did a good job blocking.
And yes, he did.
Most of the time he caught it when they threw it to him.
He is a blocking tight end.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's what I want. I don't have any interest in him throwing him the football, unless it's like some sort of weird trick play and he's like acting like he's lost like Billy Bob.
I will agree to your terms.
But for the most part, I could see, you know, Ertz being in the 40s, you know, Eckler being in the low 50s, and you start to add it up, and I don't know how many catches are available for that tight end spot, or at least that tight end 1A spot.
The most compelling rookie of the class, perhaps, as we skip to the third round now, is offensive lineman Brandon Coleman, who has played guard and tackle. They drafted him as a tackle. They think he can play on the left side. His ascension, if that happens this summer, could be riveting. I mean, this to me is, if you're throwing all the rookies and they're standing on the depth chart and with this team right now into a pile, the most gripping storyline is what happens with Brandon Coleman. When does he see action at tackle? This is, I think, the most curious guess. And I'm going to say he plays in week one, doesn't start. They do like the, was it Jamal Brown, Tyler Palumbis that Mike Shanahan had?
Sounds right.
At right tackle. He also had one at guard. I remember it might have been his first game, but it was early in his tenure where Derek Dockery and Corey Lichtensteiger were like immediately rotating at left guard, and he wasn't ready to supplant Dockery, who had been a longtime locker room leader type. But he wanted to get Lichtensteiger in the game to make sure and see, okay, he could do things with our offense at the same level or better or whatever. And I could be wrong if it was Docker. That's the name that comes to mind. I think it was him. But I could see something like that where in week one, Cornelius Lucas starts, Coleman gets a couple of drives, and within a few weeks, he's the starting left tackle.
Yeah, week five is what I had in my mind, and I don't have a good reason for that, but it just sort of feels like this is what they want to happen. Right? I mean, I can think of this in various athletic experiences I've had over the years where you've got someone that's got some experience that's a veteran or that's been there, and the new hotshot guy has to, you know, meet a few metrics, meet a few bars, meet a few levels of, you know, the coaches being comfortable with him for him to eventually take over. I think that's the design. That's what they want. So to me, it's like a third of the way through the season with the veteran who you don't want to have play 18 games, 17 games, whatever. Now we'll turn the keys over to the kid.
If they sign a left tackle between now and the start of the year in Tampa Bay, and that guy who they paid pretty good money to ends up starting the whole season and Coleman does not supplant him, I have no problem with that. I don't think that is indicative of Coleman not being as good maybe right away as they thought he was going to be. I will say, though, that if Cornelius Lucas lasts the entire year as their starter, and at no point does Coleman overtake him, I would say that that's a bad sign probably. Now, one caveat here has to be it is possible, I suppose, that Cornelius Lucas just plays at a really, really high level. In the very limited action that he's had, he's been okay, like even solid, I would say. I don't think he's been a liability or problematic. So if he's solid, if he is Charles Leno-esque or something like that, that's a win to me. But even if he's a hair worse than that and he's just kind of what fans perceive Charles Leno's to be, which was just a sub-average tackle or something, then at some point Brandon Coleman probably should be overtaking him as a third-round pick that this group was really, really high on. Fair?
Yeah. I mean, in other words, this is the tipping point of the draft.
Like, nobody's blocking you. Nobody is standing in your way. It's a binary thing. There's either someone in front of you based on money or resume or whatever that is probably going to start over you, or they're saying, hey, man, the job's yours when you're ready. Go take it.
Yeah, to me, this what they've done or not done is the ultimate vote of confidence in a couple different guys. This, to me, is the swing of the offseason. And by swing, I mean, if it goes right, they are geniuses, and they should believe their own genius, and they should walk around knowing they're the smartest guys in every room. If it doesn't, this is the error that I think it is, or worse probably, right? It's a gamble that they shouldn't have made, thinking again at left tackle and the receiver spots. If the guys that they have perform well, incumbents or third-round picks, step up and it's a steal, you didn't have to go trade back into the first round to get Tyler Guyton at Oklahoma, who I desperately wanted. You didn't have to give anything up. You just waited around, let 32 teams pass multiple times over on a guy that's your left tackle of the future, and you were right about that. Take a bow. You could start every press conference, and Danny Ruye is stupid. I look forward to that happening, by the way. I hope it does. But that, to me, is this is the tipping point of the draft where, did you get too cute in round two? A little too cutesy, a little too smart for your own good, and leave a glaring need that you haven't bothered to do anything about other than cut the incumbent starter? Or were you really, really sharp?
That brings us to the second of the third round picks in the form of Luke McCaffrey, the wide receiver, former quarterback, started at Nebraska, transferred to Rice, where he became one of the better wide receivers in his conference and according to the Commanders in the country. The 100th overall pick, it was a round three pick. This is the pick, by the way, they got for Chase Young.
Uh-huh.
Think about that. So there was a lot of debate about Chase Young and should they trade him, should they keep him. He went to San Fran, played over half the season, had two sacks, and he's currently on the PUP list to start training camp with the Saints. And the Commanders kind of sold as high as they could at the time, or they determined they were ready to move on. And we'll see if the Luke McCaffrey pick is right or not. But in an offseason where they needed weapons for their young number two pick quarterback, they got a top 100 wide receiver for Chase Young, which I think looks really, really smart.
Yeah, instead of being left with nothing.
Right. Well, or
a compensatory pick next year.
A compensatory next year, or keeping Chase Young, paying Chase Young, whatever the alternative was. I will take a high upside wide receiver and hope that they evaluated correctly with the first team all AAC pass catcher. Then I would like a defensive end who hasn't put up the production that you were hoping for when he was drafted in the top five. I'll ask you the same question about McCaffrey I did about Sinnott. Does he catch a pass in week one?
That's a great question. I'm going to say yes, because remember, they've had a couple different guys over the years. Remember the first couple of weeks years ago, they featured Dyami Brown? Like, wait till you see it. And then the reps went away, sort of the looks. You've seen something similar for Jahan Dotson. You saw something similar for some of the guys that are kind of the new toys. Kelvin Harmon was a factor early on. When someone's drafted, it's your guy, and we've seen nothing but shorts and T-shirts, you get out there. Now, it doesn't mean that McCaffrey's going to be one of those dudes that's not any good, or it doesn't mean he's going to be great, but I think early on they might give him a shot.
So Dyami Brown's debut, he caught one ball for minus 2 yards on a screen. He had 3 for 34 the following week, but remember, there was an injury, so I think he started, and then he ended up going to the bench, and he caught one pass over the next month or so. So would you go over under that production, like 4 catches through his first 4 games?
Over.
I would too.
Still sub 10 catches, though.
Through four games?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Like, I don't think it's over 2.5 catches per game.
No, because if he's over 10 catches, you're talking about him on pace for close to, like, 45 or 50 grabs, which I do not see.
Which I don't see.
So, yeah, I think it'll probably be, like, 7 or 8 catches. But if you told me right now he goes 3 for 35 in the first game, I would not be shocked by that. And if that's the case, now you bump up 7 or 8 pretty sizably.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that he's going to do that all season long, but you know, if he were to go out and do that, you're on. That's a 50-catch season. You know, if you're catching 3 balls a week. But I say all this, maybe there's a better way to just cut to the chase here. I do think he'll be on the field running routes. I think he'll get some targets.
Well, so and we always talk about this.
Right away.
Yeah, I harp on it. Who's blocking you? The opportunity. I think the opportunity is there. There are a bunch of guys, the aforementioned Dalmy Brown, but it's Olamide Zaccheaus, Dax Milne, Mitchell Tinsley, you know, Jamison Crowder's second tour of duty with Washington. There's not like Amon-Ra St. Brown in your way to be a slot slash outside guy. You know what I mean? There's no star here. So this regime selected you. There's a chance you get a chance to beat out some of these other dudes, at least early on.
Those are the top 3 rounds worth of picks. We can continue the discussion later in the show. We got to win off the field next because it is Friday. You got to count up your moral victories. What has gone right in your day and put a smile on your face that nobody else would care about? You can tell us next at 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. Time to figure out how you are winning off the field. Can't be important. Can't be something that anyone else would care about. It's got to be something teeny tiny. Call us up, 800-636-1067. We will count up these wins with you on Grant and Danny. We do this today because many, many, many years ago, Goose Allen once said,
"We're winning off the field, but we got to start winning on the field."
I will give you an example. We are able to do the winning off the field segment despite not having access to any of the audio we normally use on our radio show.
Oh, yeah.
I think most of America is having some kind of computer issues.
So they can't get audio either?
We're in that boat. But we have a hardworking producer who troubleshoots things.
Mm-hmm.
And Darius went back in the archives and found some audio in the past of winning off the field and then recorded it. And all of that work meant that we could hear how people are winning off the field. Therefore, we are.
Winning off the field?
Oh, would you look at that? I get what he did.
He could have just sat there on his hands and said no winning off the field today.
Mm-mm-mm.
A lesser producer would have. Many producers might. Not Darius.
Not this one. Not this time.
Not our guy.
Here's my winning off the field. So I'm sitting there going, I got to make myself some lunch. I've been spending too much money lately. I've been eating out. I don't want to do that. So I'm going to make a sandwich. But I'm like, well, it's not going to be a good sandwich because we have no mayo. We're out of it. And just, you know, we're in between grocery orders and it's just not there, right? There's no mayo. Like, there's that yellow mustard that we got for hot dogs, but it's like, that's not great. I'm not just going to have that on a sandwich. I'm not a savage.
Mayo is short for?
Mayonnaise. Anything? Any follow-ups on that or no?
You always say it weird. I just wanted to hear you say it.
How do I say it? That's weird. Remember we went through this before?
Yeah. You say mayonnaise, like M-A-N, man.
Do you say mayonnaise? What do you say?
Mayonnaise.
Yeah, that's what I just said, right?
No, you say mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, keep going.
Yeah. So I'm like, we don't have any. And wouldn't you know it, I'm rooting around in the fridge, making a lot of noise and rumbling and like bumping into stuff that my wife hates. And I find a little teeny tiny speckle of mayo that nobody knew was there. This had been buried in the fridge, kind of behind other things. So the normal survey would say there's no mayo.
Wow.
This last little bit of mayo, and it went right on my sandwich, and I ate it. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
Attaboy.
Mayo.
That's such a good feeling, yeah. By the way. When you have come to grips, you've come to terms with the fact that you are without something, only to then find out that you have the thing.
There's a little bit.
Because before you know you don't have it, there's a gleam, man.
There's a gleam.
There's some hope. And then the resignation sets in, and you're like, I'm going to eat, and then you're just bumped. You're
like, this weird dry sandwich now.
I'm going to eat a terrible sandwich, and then over that hill, like a beacon of hope, comes the mayonnaise on a horse to save the day.
Would you mind if I tell the people how I'm winning off the field?
We would love that.
Sure, yeah.
So today is Friday, July 19th, which is the release date of a movie by the name of Twisters, starring our buddy Glenn Powell, who we are in studio with.
Producing this show and in a movie.
And in a movie.
Sure would be cool to see Twisters with Glenn Powell, wouldn't it?
That's the great thing.
Oh.
I think we're going to go see the movie with Glenn Powell tonight. Some fellowship between me, Grant Paulson, and Ryan Clary. We're going to go see the movie
about
Twisters
tonight. We can't leave Danny out.
And what about Danny?
Danny asked us to save him a seat, but we know how that's going to go.
So he'll be there.
Yeah.
He wouldn't ask us to save him a seat.
Don't start the movie without me. Like, don't let him start it, because I think did you guys say there was no one else in the theater
when
you
booked the seats? So we booked our seats, and there's absolutely no one in the theater that we're in, as of right now.
Don't know what time the movie is. Maybe that'll help him.
10:35.
Oh, that's tonight?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's when the trailers start.
Yeah.
So what time are you going to get there?
10:30, never.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm going to participate in fellowship with my friends and sing Twisters. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
Are you going to get snacks? What kind of snacks are you going
to
get?
I want to do this later. I want to have more time on the movie experience. I'd like to game plan this with you guys on air.
Because you know Darius hates popcorn.
Well, that's not true.
That's why I asked.
I remember
that's
that.
That's not true.
He's going to get nachos. It's going to rick me. But yeah, we've got to get to the bottom of our game plan.
Okay.
So we will do this in more detail.
All right.
Coming up later in the program that people need to know. Who we are, so we tell them. We are the Eels, the mighty, mighty Eels. Everywhere we go, the people need to know. Who we are, so we tell them. Chris in Manassas, you're on Grant and Danny. What's up?
Christopher.
Gentlemen, happy Friday to you.
Hello, Danny.
Thank you.
Hey, so I got the early release copy of College Football. My wife of 30 years let me pull an all-nighter, went ahead and took Oregon to the national championship. Therefore, I am
winning off the field.
Congrats, buddy. Huh? Congrats.
Oregon to the national title. Really?
It was that game is an absolute blast. Probably the best sports game that's ever been out, and I'm 52 years old.
Ever? Whoa.
An all-nighter for a video game at 52 is incredible, by the way. And can I say Dan Lanning who? He did what Dan Lanning's been unable to do. He got the lads to the national title in year one. Rich is in Olney. What's up, Rich?
Richard.
What's going on, boys? How you feeling today?
Hey, bud.
We're feeling good.
So this Sunday is my big annual barbecue, and I will be enjoying drinks and beers with the coolest producer in town, Mr. Darius. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
So you've got yourself the annual Rich and Olney cookout coming in hot.
Yes, we do.
What are the meats that are going to be on?
Yeah, what are the meats, buddy?
So this morning I made 72 handmade burgers, 27% fat. I got some all-beef hot dogs, and I'm going to be making about 11 pounds of pulled pork.
So wait. Why did you make the burgers today? Why are we so far?
He packed the patties.
I know, but why?
I need the sauce to set in. That way, they're firm when I put them down on the grill.
Oh, he is really doing his thing.
You think he doesn't know what he's doing? Come on.
Who's going? Darius, Clary. You guys are going.
Well, Clary was coming.
Opted out. He's an opt out. Yeah. You just can't. Yeah, you can't pin Clary down. He's a tough guy. He's a busy guy. I get that.
He's very popular.
Yeah, that is
true.
Extremely.
He's got a movie premiere.
He might have to go see the Twisters premiere in L.A. So you went there last year, Darius. Were the meats silly off the grill?
Oh my goodness! I still have dreams of the burgers that I had last year.
Wow,
I really do.
What time is this at, Rich?
We start around 1:00.
See, I'm supposed to be at the Nats game on Sunday, but a burger off a grill sounds pretty good. All right, so we do have a man as going as proxy.
We do have a show rep, which is great.
We have a show representative, Darius Dameron, and it sounds like Ryan's a maybe baby.
Well, actually, I'm now working on Sunday. This is not a joke. You can listen to me on the radio with Doc Walker. So I'll be over at the Nats game doing the show from there. So unfortunately, I won't be able to make it.
Hold on, time out. What do you mean doing the show from there?
We will be doing the morning show Sunday morning. Doc Walker, myself, and we'll be doing that show.
From the Red Box?
From the Red Box
they
Sunday.
They do that on Sundays?
Apparently we do now. This was asked if I could come in and do it, and I said sure. So I'm now working on Sunday, and then we'll be going to the Nats game.
But I didn't even know we do from the ballpark on Sunday.
I'm pretty sure it's because Doc is a part of Sunday's DC Hall of Fame bit.
Yes.
Oh, is that's he getting happening. Inducted?
No. I don't know if he's getting inducted. I think he might be hosting or emceeing or something.
Yeah.
He's doing something with it, I remember seeing.
Yes.
Correct. So
really?
It's easier for him to be at the park, so that way then he can go and do what he needs to do right after the show.
Look at the good doctor. I love that.
Well, I just think it's weird that Ryan specifically asked to pick up that shift instead of just going to Rich's Barbecue. I thought that was tough.
Irresponsible.
You know what I mean? Like, can I please work that?
He said. Vinny in Seat Pleasant. Hello, Vinny. How are you?
What's going on? That's how you feel today. Happy Friday to you.
Hey, buddy.
And to you.
I have a small victory. I went into work today. I delivered for DHL. I'm thinking I have a hell of a lot of freight to deliver. Get there, and I have none. I had to put a makeshift route together. Ended up with 30 packages, and I am off work now on my way home. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
Let's go,
that's
Vinny.
Perfect.
Well done, buddy.
That's how the whole segment is supposed to go, like that.
It is. Also, I left my car, ran inside in D.C., went back out to my car, and didn't have a ticket. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
It also wasn't taken from you.
Well, I locked it.
Oh. I thought you said you left it running.
No. I just left
it.
Oh,
I see.
Without paying for parking.
Gotcha.
I didn't, leave it running. Yeah. That would be winning off the field. Nobody stole it and joyrode in it with three of their buddies. Therefore,
winning off the field.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. The Beltway Blitz comes your way next. Time to figure out how you are winning off the field. Can't be important. Can't be something that anyone else would care about. It's got to be something teeny tiny. Call us up, 800-636-1067. We will count up these wins with you on Grant and Danny. We do this today because many, many, many years ago, Goose Allen once said,
"We're winning off the field, but we got to start winning on the field."
I will give you an example. We are able to do the winning off the field segment despite not having access to any of the audio we normally use on our radio show.
Oh, yeah.
I think most of America is having some kind of computer issues.
So they can't get audio either?
We're in that boat. But we have a hardworking producer who troubleshoots things. Mm-hmm. And Darius went back in the archives and found some audio in the past of winning off the field and then recorded it. And all of that work meant that we could hear how people are winning off the field. Therefore, we are.
Winning off the field?
Oh, would you look at that? I get what he did.
He could have just sat there on his hands and said no winning off the field today.
Mm-mm.
A lesser producer would have. Many producers might. Not Darius.
Not this one. Not this time.
Not our guy.
Here's my winning off the field. So I'm sitting there going, I got to make myself some lunch. I've been spending too much money lately. I've been eating out. I don't want to do that. So I'm going to make a sandwich. But I'm like, well, it's not going to be a good sandwich because we have no mayo. We're out of it. And just, they're in between grocery orders and it's just not there, right? There's no mayo. There's that yellow mustard that we got for hot dogs, but it's like, that's not great. I'm not just going to have that on a sandwich. I'm not a savage.
Mayo is short for?
Mayonnaise. Anything? Any follow-ups on that or no?
You always say it weird. I just wanted to hear you say it.
How do I say it? That's weird. Remember we went through this before?
Yeah, yeah. You say mayonnaise, like M-A-N, man.
Do you say mayonnaise? What do you say?
Mayonnaise.
Yeah, that's what I just said, right?
No, you say mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, keep going.
Yeah. So I'm like, we don't have any. And wouldn't you know it, I'm rooting around in the fridge, making a lot of noise and rumbling and bumping into stuff that my wife hates. And I find a little teeny tiny speckle of mayo that nobody knew was there. This had been buried in the fridge, kind of behind other things. So the normal survey would say there's no mayo.
Wow.
This last little bit of mayo, and it went right on my sandwich, and I ate it. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
Attaboy.
Mayo.
That's such a good feeling, yeah. By the way. When you have come to grips, you've come to terms with the fact that you are without something, only to then find out that you have the thing.
There's a little bit.
Because before you know you don't have it, there's a gleam, man.
There's a gleam.
There's some hope. And then the resignation sets in, and you're like, I'm going to eat, and you're just bummed. You're
eating this weird dry sandwich now?
I'm going to eat a terrible sandwich, and then over that hill, like a beacon of hope, comes the mayonnaise on a horse to save the day.
Would you mind if I tell the people how I'm winning off the field?
We would love that.
Sure, yeah.
So today is Friday, July 19th,
mm-hmm.
which is the release date of a movie by the name of Twisters, starring our buddy Glenn Powell, who we are in studio with.
Producing this show and in a movie.
And in a movie.
Sure would be cool to see Twisters with Glenn Powell, wouldn't it?
That's the great thing.
Oh.
I think we're going to go see the movie with Glenn Powell tonight. Some fellowship between me, Grant Paulson, and Ryan Clary. We're going to go see the movie Twisters tonight.
We can't leave Danny out.
And what about Danny?
Danny asked us to save him a seat, but we know how that's going to go.
So he'll be there.
Yeah.
He wouldn't ask us to save him a seat.
Don't start the movie without me. Like, don't let him start it, because I think there's... Did you guys say there was no one else in the theater
when
you
booked the seats? So we booked our seats, and there's absolutely no one in the theater that we're in, as of right now.
Don't know what time the movie is. Maybe that'll help him.
10:35.
Oh, that's tonight?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's when the trailers start.
Yeah.
So what time are you going to get there?
10:30, never.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm going to participate in fellowship with my friends and sing Twisters. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
Are you going to get snacks? What kind of snacks are you going
to
get?
Oh, I want to do this later. I want to have more time on the movie experience. I'd like to game plan this with you guys on air.
Because you know Darius hates popcorn.
Well, that's not true.
That's why I asked.
I remember
that's
that.
That's not true.
He's going to get nachos. It's going to rick me. But yeah, we've got to get to the bottom of our game plan.
Okay.
So we will do this in more detail.
All right.
Coming up later in the program that people need to know. Who we are, so we tell them. We are the Eels, the mighty, mighty Eels. Everywhere we go, the people need to know who we are, so we tell them. Chris in Manassas, you're on Grant and Danny. What's
Christopher.
Up?
Gentlemen, happy Friday to you.
Hello, Danny.
Thank you.
Hey, so I got the early release copy of College Football. My wife of 30 years let me pull an all-nighter, went ahead and took Oregon to the national championship. Therefore, I am
winning off the field.
Congrats, buddy. Huh? Congrats.
Oregon to the national title. Really?
It was that game is an absolute blast. Probably the best sports game that's ever been out, and I'm 52 years old.
Ever? Whoa.
An all-nighter for a video game at 52 is incredible, by the way. And can I say Dan Lanning who? He did what Dan Lanning's been unable to do. He got the lads to the national title in year one. Rich is in Olney. What's up, Rich?
Richard.
What's going on, boys? How you feeling today?
Hey, bud.
We're feeling good.
So this Sunday is my big annual barbecue, and I will be enjoying drinks and beers with the coolest producer in town, Mr. Darius. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
So you've got yourself the annual Rich and Olney cookout coming in hot.
Yes, we do.
What are the meats that are going to be on?
Yeah, what are the meats, buddy?
So this morning I made 72 handmade burgers, 27% fat. I got some all-beef hot dogs, and I'm going to be making about 11 pounds of pulled pork.
So wait. Why did you make the burgers today? Why are we so far
out?
He
packed the patties.
I know, but why?
I need the sauce to set in. That way they're firm when I put them down on the grill.
Oh, he is really doing his thing.
You think he doesn't know what he's doing? Come on.
Who's going? Darius, Clary? You guys are going?
Well, Clary was coming.
Opted out? He's an opt-out. Yeah. You just can't, can't pin Clary down. He's a tough guy. He's a busy guy. I get that.
He's very popular.
Yeah, he's
that is true.
Extremely.
He's
popular.
Got a movie premiere.
He might have to go see the Twisters premiere in L.A. So you went there last year, Darius. Were the meats silly off the grill?
Oh my goodness! I still have dreams of the burgers that I had last year.
Wow,
I really do.
What time is this at, Rich?
We start around 1:00.
See, I'm supposed to be at the Nats game on Sunday, but a burger off a grill sounds pretty good. All right, so we do have a man as going as proxy.
We do have a show rep, which is great.
We have a show representative, Darius Dameron, and it sounds like Ryan's a maybe baby.
I'm now working on Sunday. This is not a joke. You can listen to me on the radio with Doc Walker. So I'll be over at the Nats game doing the show from there. So unfortunately, I won't be able to make it.
Hold on, time out. What do you mean doing the show from there?
We will be doing the morning show Sunday morning. Doc Walker, myself, and we'll be doing that show.
From the Red Box?
From the Red Box
they
Sunday.
They do that on Sundays?
Apparently we do now. This was this was asked if I could come in and do it, and I said sure. So I'm now working on Sunday, and then we'll be going to the Nats game.
But I didn't even know we do from the ballpark on Sunday.
I'm pretty sure it's because Doc is a part of Sunday's DC Hall of Fame bit.
Yes.
Is he getting inducted?
No.
I don't know if he's getting inducted. I think he might be hosting or emceeing or something.
Yeah.
He's doing something with it, I remember seeing.
Yes.
Correct. So
really?
It's easier for him to be at the park, so that way then he can go and do what he needs to do right after the show.
Look at the good doctor. I love that.
Well, I just think it's weird that Ryan specifically asked to pick up that shift instead of just going to Rich's Barbecue. I thought that was tough.
Irresponsible.
You know what I mean? Like, can I please work that?
He said. Vinny in Seat Pleasant. Hello, Vinny. How are you?
What's going on? That's how you're feeling today. Happy Friday to you.
Hey, buddy.
And to you.
I have a small victory. I went into work today. I delivered for DHL. I'm thinking I have a hell of a lot of freight to deliver. Get there, and I have none. I had to put a makeshift route together. Ended up with 30 packages, and I am off work now on my way home. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
Let's go,
that's
Vinny.
Perfect.
Well done,
buddy. That's how the whole segment is supposed to go, like that.
It is. Also, I left my car, ran inside in D.C., went back out to my car, and didn't have a ticket. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
It also wasn't taken from you. Like,
well, I locked it.
Oh. I thought you said you left it running.
No. I just left
it. Oh, I see.
Without a, you know, paying for parking.
Gotcha.
I didn't, like, leave it running. Yeah. That would be winning off the field. Nobody stole it and joyrode in it with three of their buddies. Therefore,
winning
I am.
Winning off the field.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. The Beltway Blitz comes your way next.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.